My name is Margaret. I'm a compulsive eater from Avenel, New Jersey.
Hi, Margaret.
And I am not a member of the Red Bank Saturday Big Book Group, but I'm going to kick the day off. Don't remember quite what we've talked about in the past, but basically, I was a year and a half into OA, and somebody gave me some tapes, and I listened to these two fellas talk about their experience, and they went through eight tapes of about the first 164 pages of the Big Book, and it changed my life immensely. I got myself to AA and got myself sober because I could relate to what I heard. There's something very powerful about one person sharing their experience with another. It rings true. And there's no money involved. It's just the truth that we're here. We don't have filters for anything. And along the way, I've met many other people that have been profoundly affected by the opportunities of recovery that the steps offer us. Back in 2005, I was privileged to be part of a little committee, along with my friend Kevin, that put together a Big Book Weekend Ben Wilson, Wilson House in Vermont. And I was a little cranky because all the speakers for that weekend, with you as the exception, came from North Jersey. I said, where's that recovery in Central Jersey? And I've had the desire to have a weekend, a series like we're having here, ever since then. So when some members of the group said, gee, we've been out and we've been to this and we've been to that, could we do something local? I said, the time has come. And sat down and made up a list of 13, 14 people that I know have recovery via the program in the Big Book without the side trips and or interpretation or with a lot of willingness. And people are really rock solid in having a sense that there's always a higher power with them. And called those people, and almost without exception, except for a lack of abstinence on one person's part, sure, love to participate. Didn't even tell them yet it was in Red Bank. So that's how this all came about. We spread the word of what we believe in many, many shapes and forms. And for a woman who doesn't drive, it's nice to get to Red Bank every Saturday morning. God always provides what you need in every area of your life. I'm always reminded by that. So after 5 years later, my dream of having a little talk with my friend Kevin has come true, and I think I have many more dreams in my life today being in recovery that I'm sure can be fulfilled. So that's the background of why we did this. We want to inspire other people the way I was inspired when I first listened to two strangers talk on a tape, the way you might possibly be inspired when you say, that person up there, they have something I want. Maybe I could get it this way too. And you go home and you start reading your Big Book, you talk to people about it, you relate to it, you make it part of your daily life. And I'm going to turn it over to Kevin now to continue on this journey. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Kevin, and I'm a bulimic.
Hi, Kevin.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome to this OA 12-step journey through the Big Book with our six-week speaker series. And why don't we open just with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
This is a six-week speaker series from OA members who have experience with the recovery program from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This study's purpose is to encourage OA members to consider having the experience in doing the steps out of the Big Book. It is our experience the program of recovery from the Big Book has strengthened our program and which has solved our problem. We hope this speaker series will inspire you to have this experience. During this six-week speaker series, we will be presenting the instructions on the program of recovery by sharing our experience. Many new and returning members have found an intense focus and insight gained by a strong message of recovery and hope offered in the Big Book can cut through, you know, our internal resistance and doubt. Another purpose of this series is to share the solution that the Big Book offers, that it may better help us carry the Big Book message to those who still suffer. This is a 90-minute meeting, and it will consist of speakers sharing on their experience with the recovery process by working the steps out of the Big Book. We will pass a donation basket in accordance with the Sabbath tradition, and there's a We Care book is available to share contact information. We want to encourage you to attend the entire series. The speakers have come here to share their gift of recovery with us. We believe this gift is so valuable that we can't live without it. You will hear speakers share their experience, which has changed their lives profoundly. And we have found freedom that is permanent recovery so long as we follow a few simple rules. And I just want to remind everyone to, please set to silent or vibrate your electronic devices, and please don't text during the message. The bathrooms are available in the back, as everyone knows, and this speaker series is being taped and will be available at the Central Jersey website in MP3 format or copied to a CD. The handouts will also be available on the website after November 6th. And so I think we're up. We will take a break at some point during this meeting, a little short break. And so we have three wonderful speakers this morning. And I think I'm going to start with Jennifer on the end there.
Or Janice, actually.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Janice.
Okay, we'll start with Janice in the middle.
Okay.
I'm Janice in the middle. I'm powerless over food.
Hi, Janice.
And this is my home meeting. I feel really comfortable here and grateful for someone that gave me the seat in the middle, because I was feeling a lot of spielkes on the end. And the reason I feel that is, a line that got to me that Kevin mentioned is, cut through our internal resistance and doubt. I'm not good at public speaking, especially when I'm in the presence of, I feel like I'm bookended by people that I admire who just their recovery just rolls right off of them. And my recovery was great in the shower this morning, and it was great in the mirror, and it's wonderful in the car. And I have these fantastic conversations with God when I can hear him speak to me, and it just things just pop into my head. And I can tell you that preparing for this privilege today, I had a cathartic experience that I would like to share with you, and I hope it's as mind-blowing as it was for you as it was for me, but it was good for me. So, when I came into the program, I came in kind of backwards. I came in 1977, and I was just a few pounds away from a goal weight, really, I was rocking. I was guru. I was 32 years old, wearing shorts in public for the first time in my life. I had lost well over 100 pounds, and I couldn't figure out why I wasn't happy about it. My life turned completely upside down. My husband hated the fact that I was thin, and I wasn't so happy about it myself. I had a few more pounds until that magical goal thing. And when someone came to talk to me about how I had done this miraculous thing, and I started to talk to him about my diet, and he said, "Well, I heard about this thing, this OA," and I said, "That sounds great. I'd like to go with you to experience that." And I walked into a room where people were talking about my behavior. They were laughing and crying and hugging each other, and I knew I was home. I knew from the first second that I walked in the door. So this is my opportunity to give back what has been so vigorously given to me. And this is my chance to expose my craziness. And I've heard people say many times, "Oh, those people are crazy. That's not for me." And the first thing I thought was, "Oh, thank God, these people are crazy just like me. I just want to live here. Where can I get a job as the president of OA? Maybe they'll pay me for this." But my problem is, I think it's just because I started stuffing down my feelings with food when I was so young. I mean, my first experience with food was 3 years old. I remember what I was served at my birthday party when I was 3 years old. And I've just stuffed my feelings down with food for such a long time that The steps will ask me a question, or my sponsor will ask me a question, or I'll be working on something with the sponsee, and it takes me a while to, you know, sometimes I have to do a writing or think about it or pray on it, and it just doesn't come to me right away. It's just something is just broken in me, and the biggest thing that's broken in me is knowing when I've had enough. Enough food is my drug of choice. It's my instant gratification. And I have tried everything short of recreational drugs to find the high that food gives me. And nothing is the same as overeating and eating certain substances. You know, some people know how many times they've gained and lost weight. I only know that I've gained and lost more times than I care to count. It's been over 100 pounds twice, and so many times 40 to 80 pounds. And it just seemed that I came into the program, I did not work the steps, but when I hit the brick wall of divorce, I dived into the program head first. I gave it everything I got. I did 90 meetings in 90 days. The thing that baffled me is why I ran back into the food. Tremendous recovery, tremendous spiritual experience, wonderful, just happy with my life. And now, at this leg in my journey, I am convinced that I know what it is, and this is the catharsis that I'm experiencing doing this this series. It's called Continue to Take Personal Inventory, and When I Was Wrong, Promptly Admitted It. I'm doing everything that the big book says. I've always weighed and measured my food. I came in at a time when a gray sheet was possible. I came in at a time when writings was called writings and burnings. I wrote journal after journal after journal. I've always had a sponsor. I've always weighed and measured my food, but I have not always double-checked my own behavior. I blame this guy. I blame my parents. I blame my husband. I blame my sister. But the woman in the mirror had carte blanche for something, and I guess I can use the excuse of I didn't really know my feelings, and it has taken me this long of working the program to understand the way I'm feeling, to understand that so much of my anger is about fear, and vice versa. So the feelings get all jumbled up, and my disease argues with me. I have a disease that tells me I can do one thing, and a recovery that says I must not. So it becomes confusing, and the 10th step is something that just helps me sort it out so beautifully, like nothing else I've ever given my attention to. So there I was. It's 2008. You know, I'm again in the midst of this extremely confusing relapse, which probably lasted about 10 years, in all honesty. I was still at that point on a diet. And I felt that I needed to lose weight before I could go back to OA to lose weight. That is the insanity of my disease. Self-centeredness is my number one character defect. And all the rest of them just kind of rotate around that sun like little planets. But self-centeredness is the hub. And I'm a bulldozer. You know, here I am making amends and fixing my character defects and wearing shorts while I'm doing it. And I got extremely grandiose, which is, you know, part of self-centeredness. And the bulldozer, you know, life doesn't want to do what I want it to do. So I just get out my bulldozer and run them over. And when I worked with a sponsor, my sponsor in the 90s, I go through these 10-year increments. She taught me how to let God be the bulldozer, and to stop that. With this sponsor, God lover, she's teaching me to shut up and not say anything. That's what we did in the beginning. I just kind of wind and roll and think I'm doing things, and I really need to let God do that. But the mistake I made, and although I feel there are no mistakes in program, there's just the results of certain behavior. So the behavior that I did was I kept asking God to strike me abstinent. That's how I wanted to come out of my last relapse. I would struggle out 20 pounds, 40 pounds. Again, it was about losing weight. And I would pray every day for God to strike me abstinent. Out of my mouth, I say, I don't ask God to do parlor tricks, but here I was asking God to change me, to go poof, and I would wake up and I just wouldn't want to go into the refrigerator anymore. So I realized in this recovery that I needed to change my prayer to willingness. Willingness to be teachable, willingness to work the program. I heard God ask me, what are you doing besides weighing and measuring your food? Because that's not it for me. It's very necessary. I have to weigh and measure my food. I do continue to check that every day. But that's not the end all and be all and do all. So one afternoon I was taking a breath while I was wailing to God, and I heard him say to me, you have to go home to OA because you need OA and OA needs you. And you need to show yourself, show what you've done, show what this disease has done to you, and so you can show what I'm going to do for you by lifting this burden from your mind and your body. So I'm hoping that there are people in the room that remember me 65 pounds ago when I was hobbling through the room with a cane. And I know my partner remembers me when I was screaming and yelling and having a nervous breakdown over something that he did. I remember one year he went to get the oil changed in his car on my birthday, and I was going to get in my car and run him over. I was so furious, and I used to get these uncontrollable urges that if somebody took my parking space, I was just going to, you know, the bulldozer again. There's a movie where Kathy Bates somebody takes her parking space, and she just goes in her car and shoves them right out of it and says, the person is shocked, and she says, ha ha, I'm older, I have more insurance than you do. So it's just, that's what I was like. I remember trying to, putting my legs up to my chest and trying to physically push my husband out of bed. I was so furious with him. And this program, watching my behavior, recognizing that train when it's coming down the track to flatten me, is what's kept me clean, sober, and abstinent for 2 years, 4 months, and 6 days. 3 years is the longest time I've ever celebrated abstinence in my 33 years in program, and about 2.5 years into that, I had started to lie. So that 3 year celebration was a lie. The most wonderful comfort I have about this leg of my journey is it's an honest one. And I vowed not to lie. And telling the truth, working the 10th step, and taking that daily inventory is what's helped me to remain abstinent. All the glory goes to God for the willingness to do that, because I ask every day for willingness. Every morning I say, God, I am a flawed human being and I need your help. I tried to keep the shade on that sun. And I recall how excited I got when I got to the 11th step. You know, my prayer and meditation was bringing me to a place of love and recovery with God. I would go outside, and as soon as my feet hit the ground, I felt this tremendous connection with the earth and nature. I would go to the ocean, as I still do on a regular basis, and connect with that powerful spiritual mother that I still feel in my heart. I feel like the ocean is part of my life's blood, and she speaks to me in a song that my soul understands. But what I did was I focused on the awakening and not the awakened. I feel that I relied too much on God to keep me abstinent. God does not weigh and measure my food. I heard in this room, God does not put my sneakers on. I have to get to the meeting. He does not, although sometimes he makes the phone ring. He does not make sure that I tell my sponsor if I change my food. And he's not my binge buddy. So this fantastic relationship I have with God is just kind of like the relationship I had with my father. My father was out there shoveling the snow and paying the bills and doing everything for me. And he would say to me many times, as long as I'm alive, you have nothing to worry about. And God says the same thing to me. As long as I'm alive, you have nothing to worry about. And it's my job to keep God and abstinence first in my life. And I do that. The number one way I do that is by working the 10th step and checking my behavior every day. Every day. Now, I love the big book. You know, every session, you know, is the lesson, the first step, second step, third step. And I really love the promises, which are at the end of the 9th step. And the big book gives us a little review on page 83. So after the promises that begin, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. Wow, before I'm halfway through, that's great. I'm an addict. I want to know what am I getting for doing all this? You took away my food. So the big book says we will be amazed, that I'm going to be amazed before I'm halfway through. And that has proven true for me. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness, and we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. So most of us who have been in program for any length of time recognize these promises. And when the big book asks, are these extravagant promises, we can all respond, we think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. So this little paragraph here, for me, that's a little stop point. The big book has given me this wonderful, juicy tidbit for having worked up to the ninth step. It's showing me the possibility of what I can achieve by working the program up to this point. And I can say, in all honesty, that I have received every one of these promises that the big book mentions, including the fear of financial insecurity. It's just blowing my mind that I have received that. So this little paragraph here, are these extravagant promises? The big book kind of gives us a chance to stop and say, wow, you know, look at this. This is really something good. And then it continues saying, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So in the interest of time, I see that these portions of the big book have been supplied in the handout, and I think that is really, really wonderful. So that can be gone over at another time. But, you know, the big book continues on page 86, where it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day, also part of step 10, another very, very important part of my day. I always write my food at night. I review it again in the morning before I give it to my sponsor, because once I give it to my sponsor in the morning, for me, it's written in stone. That's what I've committed for the day. That's my honesty for the day, and that's what I eat. So when we retire at night, we constructively review our day, where we were resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making this review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. This line, we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. I am a relapse survivor. That I used to share in the rooms that relapse was my middle name. I want to get rid of that middle name. My middle name is Ray, and that's what I want, not relapse. So I am just so relieved by God's presence in my life and the lift of my obsession. I'm so amazed and dumbstruck that God loves me so much that He pulled me out of the hole one more time. I can't believe He's still speaking to me after what I did to Him, but He is. And it's taken me over 30 years to use my compulsive overeating as a blessing, to use my relapse as a stepping stone to my willingness to go to any lengths. I work a militant program. I have to. That's my choice. I heard at this speaker series someone else that works a militant program, and that's what works for me. It's wonderful. If it doesn't work for you, just come in and hang out with us until it does, or until you find something that works for you. But this works for me. So it's taken me over 30 years to use my compulsive overeating as a blessing and my relapse behavior to develop a relationship with God. And there's nothing I need today that God is not currently supplying. My favorite affirmation is, I am a woman in recovery. And it's been my pleasure to share that with you. So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. And, no, you know, this is a real great part of the program that we, you know, that I found through my experience with working these steps. And I was really identifying with what you were saying. You know, it really came to be when I found that this step was exactly where it was supposed to be in this process. You know, I had been developing this relationship with a higher power through the previous steps, and it had built up to this to this point where I could really start openly having this relationship with a higher power in very concrete, with very concrete instructions, and it really moved it to a different level. At the time that I was at the first time really being instructed through this, the steps 10 and 11, I was emotionally not in a very poor place, and it felt, you know, there wasn't, I couldn't, you know, I found that I couldn't really make a correlation between how I felt and what was going on spiritually with me. I have a history of having these incredible spiritual experiences that are incredibly painful, and that's just been my experience with that. That's not the rule, certainly not. And you know, it's definitely been true, like what I've gotten, my spiritual experience and the expression through the steps has been an educational one. I usually don't see the results of that or understand what is occurring until much later on, where it makes sense now. And that's part of this processing that, you know, I was going through and continue to go through. You know, one thing I found is that there really is something to this spiritual stuff. You know, this is not a game. This is not mumbo jumbo. You know, there are days, and I've been experiencing this again this last week, where I am just driven by this presence that is just upon me. Mom passed away two nights ago, and I was able to be there and lead my family into making the decisions necessary to help her be comfortable. You know, she was at a point where it was either we could continue to treat her and, you know, prolong her life, or we could, you know, make Mom comfortable. And so, you know, I was able to, you know, work with my family and present this whole situation to them. And I'm a healthcare professional, so I know exactly what's going to happen here and what we do in that profession. And, you know, I was able to, you know, tell my family, you know, that I think it's best if we let Mom go. And so that's what we did, and we made her comfortable, and we were all there, and it was a surreal experience, and that's how those experiences are. It was, and we cried, and we wept, and we comforted each other, and we were all able to be there. And it's, I have a really great family. And it's crazy, you know. I have the crazy family too, of course, just like a lot of us do, you know. And those things will go on, you know, through, you know, they'll be what they'll be. But you know, I could see like my purpose, at least as far as I can understand it, is to be there for my family now, you know, and to provide. To really lay myself open, and you know, and I'll give you an exact example. Yesterday morning, we were over at my mom's house, and me and my nephew stepped outside, and he was there on that night. And I said, "Well, how did you think it went the night before?" And he goes, "I was really angry at you, Kevin, for making that decision." And he goes, I was in the moment, and it was hard for me to understand that. And I said, go on. And he you know, he began to process out his feelings. And, you know, and I really see it's, you know, it's just an incredible thing that this program has given me the strength to be able to just be in the moment, be there, and allow people to go through their process, to be upset, to be angry, to express it. And then later on, you know, he told me, he goes, you know, but I could see what you made the right decision, you know. And you know, and I've been experiencing more of that with, you know, I just go to my family members and say, let's lay it out here and tell me what's going on so we can, it's part of this process of grieving. And it's you know, this program has given me the strength and the guidance, you know, I have a higher power in my life, and you know, I'm not alone. I walk through this with a fair amount of confidence. So just wanted to share that little bit. There's really wonderful things that can happen, even though they may hurt incredibly, you know. So.
Jennifer
this time. I got that right. Okay. Thanks a lot. You can, we'll hear from Jennifer next. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jennifer. I'm a compulsive overeater and a relapse survivor.
Hi, Jennifer.
I was thinking about, I'm going to do this backwards. I'm going to talk about the 11th step first, because I really had to finally reach an understanding about my 11th step before I could appropriately do my 10th step. I heard somebody in the room say one time that when she came to step two, she realized that she just really wasn't going to be able to believe in a higher power than herself, so she skipped that step and just did all the rest. And I remember thinking at the time, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life, because I understood up here that you can't turn your will and your life over to something that you don't think exists, and you're certainly not going to, what is it, improve your conscious contact with this thing that doesn't exist. But when I was thinking about it this morning, deciding what I was going to talk about, I realized that my first 14 years in program, that is exactly what I did. Because I was gifted with abstinence as soon as I came in the rooms and did not relapse the first time until I had been abstinent for 3.5 years, I understood that there was something greater than the food in my life, that there was something that helped me to be abstinent. I got that. I knew it wasn't me, because the only thing I listened to is the disease. But I really struggled with this notion of a higher power. And I don't think I realized that until I asked this woman to be my step sponsor 2 years ago. And every single time I talked to her, this woman asked me, did you pray about it? Did you pray about it? Did you pray about it? And what I realized is that I believed that there was a higher power, but I didn't trust that higher power. I did not. I did not trust that higher power. And it stems from childish wishes, you know, from prayers as a child, you know. Please make it so my dad stops drinking. Please make it so my parents don't get divorced. Please make me thin by the end of the summer. You know, all those prayers that a child prays, I felt betrayed by my higher power. What happened was a woman that I dearly loved and had been working with for several years told me she could not be my sponsor anymore because she was not helping me, is what she said. I had been in relapse for about 2 years at that point and was back up to my top weight, which is 250 pounds. And I can't imagine how hard that must have been for her to do, but she saved my life. And we continued to be friends, and we continued to talk. And I was in Virginia at the time, and I asked every single person in the room who was available to sponsor if they would be my sponsor, except for the one person that I knew I did not want to be my sponsor, even though she was available. I have never really done that before. Before, when I asked somebody to be my sponsor, they've always said yes. It's always worked. Oh, yeah, sure, of course, I'd love to sponsor you. Hardly ever happens that, no, I'm too full. No, I can't. No, I'm too full. No, I can't. No, I'm too full. Seven people before I finally asked the step sponsor I have now. And it was kind of funny because I called her and I said, well, I was just wondering if you might be available to be my sponsor? And she said, yes! Because I had been in the rooms, gaining weight, in agony for 6 months. She'd been watching me. Every time I called her, she said, did you pray about it? No, I haven't prayed about it. Pray about it, and then talk to me. So eventually, I got to where I would pray about it first. The first time, I said, okay, I'm going to pray about it first. Nothing will happen, and then I can call her. And then when she says, did you pray about it? I can say, yes, I prayed about it, and nothing happened. Well, of course, I was immediately relieved of whatever it was, or the solution presented itself. 9 times out of 10, it was just about what was in my head anyway. And luckily for me, my higher power is greater than I am and does change who and what I am and what I do, and I'm very grateful for that. There was another thought I had. Oh, and then when I realized that it worked, I remember one day I was, what's that word? Spielgus. That, I love that word. That thing, that internal strife was just ramped up in me. And I remembered that I couldn't talk to my sponsor until I prayed about it. And I had a moment where I went, well, if I pray about it, it'll go away. And I didn't want it to go away. Kind of liked it. And I went, oh, that's right. That's right. You know, at that point, I had not been binging for about 3 or 4 months. I did not have a weight and measured food plan. But I was refraining from my binge foods, and that was my abstinence. I was doing some very serious step work with her. I was being relieved of burdens of the past that I had been unable, for whatever reason, to let go of. I was feeling a lot of emotional stuff. My 16-year-old was being 16. And I remember thinking, I was like, oh, I don't want it to go away. And I went, oh, yeah, I don't want it to go away. And that's when I kind of caved. That was it. Because in that moment, well, then I trusted, too. Because I just knew if I ask, I'll receive. That's because I didn't want to ask. That's how I knew. If I asked, I would receive. Step 11. What was the other thing I wanted to say? Oh, I know what I wanted to say. The first couple years that I was in program, no, that's not right. The first 10 years I was in program, up until I heard a big book study on some CDs, what I would say is, I will do my step work, I will get recovery, and then God will be there. And that was the order in my mind. I'll do the step work. I'll do the emotional work. I'll fix what I have broken, and then God will be there. He was this afterthought for me. You know, it had nothing to do with program. Program was all about the writing and the calling and the talking and the service and, you know, the tools, which are lovely, wonderful things. But to me, I was not making God. It didn't click for me. And I don't know how many times I've read Step 12, you know, the whole spiritual awakening thing. And when I was listening to the CD, the guy was talking about his spiritual awakening. And I remember, because at that time I was still in relapse. It was before I found my Pray to God Step sponsor. And I remember thinking, oh, spiritual awakening. I want one of those. I got to get me one of those. And I've been in program for like 12 years. And I went to the store the next day, I think, and I was headed for binge food, and no, I was headed for abstinent food that was right next to binge food, and it was all the way in the back of the store. And I remember I walked into the store, and the food that I needed was right up front, so I didn't have to go to my binge food. And I was like, oh, thanks a lot, you know, grabbed it, and I went, oh, that's right. Every time I recognize that as the miracle that it is, every time I hear that voice that says, really, are you sure you want to do that? That is my spiritual awakening. My higher power has always been loud, always. There's never been a time I didn't hear my higher power. It was about obedience. And I know that that's an ugly word today for a lot of people, and I know it's particularly difficult for women. But because of who I am, it's obedience or death for me. Because in my world, if there is no higher power that I must obey, then I am God. And me being God means I can do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want, with whoever I want. And I don't care who gets hurt, as long as I'm comfortable, as long as I'm safe, That's all that matters to me. I cannot tell you how ashamed I am of that feeling sometimes. How difficult it is for me sometimes when I am aware that it has seeped up into, bubbled up into what I'm trying to accomplish in any given day. And how unbelievably grateful I am that I know that as a fallacy. There is a higher power. He has saved my butt, period. I would not be here 48 pounds lighter today than I was a year ago if it wasn't for my higher power. There's just no way. Which is cool, because that kind of segues into step 10, doesn't it? Because step 10 is about me recognizing how I am not God of my universe. It's about me watching my behavior and seeing what I'm doing. I can honestly say that my entire life I have been paying attention to what I was doing, but I always felt like my hurtful, harmful, controlling behaviors were justified, because it wouldn't work right if I didn't do it, or it wouldn't be okay if I didn't say it, or, you know, it was the right thing to do. That one's my favorite. That one's my favorite. It wouldn't be fair if we didn't do it this way. So although I was aware of my behavior, I was excusing my behavior, therefore I wasn't stopping these hurtful, harmful, controlling behaviors. Last year, I had about 3 weeks abstinence, and I went to the region, whatever region y'all are, the thing in Ocean Seven. City, Region 7 convention in Ocean City. And they had these journals that we have for sale on our literature table. And I've heard about these journals. There's a huge scandal in Virginia about these journals. So it was really funny when I saw one, because I was like, oh, the infamous journal, you know? And I opened it up, and I was like, oh, my God, look at all that work. I'm not doing that. And I put it back down on the table, and I didn't buy it. And I was like, what a big deal. They really wanted these things. Who would buy these things? And just didn't really think about it. I'd been working with a food sponsor for 3 weeks at that point, and I had never had a food sponsor the entire time I'd been in program. Once I figured out that I was not the higher power of my life, I did determine that I could not determine my food plan by myself, and got a food sponsor. Right around the time that I got my food sponsor, I also started step work, started at step one, and I have worked through that process. And recently, about 6 weeks ago, I got to my 10, 11, and 12. And in the past, 10, 11, and 12 are all one step in my brain. 10, 11, 12. Well, I always monitor my behavior. I don't need to do anything extra. 11, yeah, I know God's there, whatever. 12, yes, I'll be your sponsor. I would love to be your sponsor, you know? So that's what they were for me. And I've been all the way through them probably 8 or 9 times. So I was like, okay, back to 10, 11, and 12. The same time that I got to 10, 11, and 12, my life, for lack of a better word, exploded. Two people who are heart of my heart had incredibly hurtful, painful things done to them within a week of each other. And these events threatened my ambition, my self-esteem, my financial security. Everything that is possible to be threatened was threatened by these two events. They didn't happen to me. They happened to these hearts of my heart. And I found myself talking to people, praying, doing what I needed to do, writing what I needed to write. I started the resentment prayers on these two people, which was really funny because I was just getting to where I thought I could maybe be okay with the opposite sex. And it happened to be two guys who did it at the same time. So I was like, okay, here we go, back again. But anyway, so I was doing okay. I was keeping abstinent. I was keeping food thoughts down. I was clearing my plate every night of the anger and the resentment and the rage, that the fear that was happening to me every day. Because my step sponsor said one thing and one thing only. She said, clear yourself each night, or you will not have enough the next day. Clear yourself each night. Well, then the speaker series started, and I was sitting at the literature table, and I don't remember why, but I was, and the infamous journal. And I was like, all right, and I looked at it, and I went, wow, what a cool idea. That would be the gift of desperation. my connection, the light, was fading in me because I was so tired. I was so tired of being afraid. I was so tired of being angry and scared all the time. My light was fading, and I couldn't find my prayers. I tried, but I really couldn't find them. This book has 100 days, and within 100 days, both situations with these two hearts in my heart will be resolved. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool for me to have this physical way to keep, to strengthen the light in my life again? And it's been wonderful. I do it. I've done it. It's 21 days today. I absolutely love it. The best thing about it is, even as self-observant as I am now, and even as much as I have released the idea that I am God, I still find things that I don't catch during the day. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that there is a backup at the end of the day that says, you know, you weren't honest there. Why weren't you honest there? And then I remember, oh, because I treated this person like a child. That's not fair. That's not okay. That's controlling. I need to be honest. And so it's really nice, and it has changed my behavior in wonderful ways. Now, when I sat down at the table and Janice opened up her big book, I remembered that this was a big book study. And I'm not kidding. I completely forgot this was a big book study. I knew I was doing 10 and 11, but I was like, I don't have a single quote from the big book. And bless her heart, Margaret sent me this wonderful, fabulous packet. Please read every single page. These are great. I was looking at them while Janice was talking. I didn't have electricity this morning, so I couldn't access my computer this morning. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I flipped to the page. And my little ribbon is on the promises, because we read them at the end of this meeting every week. And one line on this page is underlined, only one line. And that line says, the spiritual life is not a theory. And I went, oh, well, there's my quote. The next line says, we have to live it. For me, my 11th step is manifested through my 10th step, because every night I say, I am not God. There is a God, and God will heal me. Thanks for letting me share.
I think we're going to go to break.
Yeah, we're going to go to break, but just before that, I would like to pass the basket.
Yeah, and if you signed up to be on the Halloween list, please check. I called most people on the list, but I didn't catch everybody. So just, you know, keep a note of when you said you would take phone calls.
Okay. So just while we're passing the basket and before we break, I just wanted to share a little bit again on my experience with doing the steps 10 and 11. After I got to a place after I had finished all my amends that I was consciously aware of, and I went to my sponsor, and he said, all right, he goes, now it is time for you to retriple your efforts to be, you know, with your higher power, he goes, and because as far as you know now, everything is clear between you and your higher power. You have a direct connection to him. And it really did, you know, prove, you know, pan out to be a very different thing. And what happened as a result of that time is I realized that I did not, I was not to go to my, back to church anymore, and I was to take a different path. And although there was a great deal of sadness for me at that time in doing that, because of that, you know, that door closed and like 20 opened. Now this is just my experience with that, you know, I really began to take those my quiet time every morning, which I still do. You know, I just take my, and a lot of it is, you know, I used to do this very formal, directed meditation in the morning, and I don't really do that. I just sit, you know, I just kind of go to my little quiet place, and I sit there, you know, for anywhere from about 20 minutes to an hour, and you know, I might do some reading, I might just have some quiet contemplation, and it just kind of it just gets me centered, you know, throughout that day. And then, you know, the idea that my sponsor, this guy who was helping me at that time, he said, your 10th step is what you're doing right there at that moment, like you are with when you when you're doing your morning meditation, is just walk that through your day. It's a walking meditation. It's a conscious meditation is what the 10th step is. And so when you're in the moment and you know you have your higher power with you, and it's like when you offend, you know, you're to be accountable for it right then and there, you know. And the book tells us to, you know, that we may need to talk about it. And that's not necessarily with another person in the program or someone, you know. It might be, it might even be a stranger, you know. Whoever, you know, one of the big things I get out of this is, like, pay attention. Pay attention, because you need to pay attention, you know. And it's my higher power presents people in my life at any given moment that I'm not sure, but, you know, perhaps I'm supposed to help that person, or perhaps they're supposed to help me, you know. And, I found that there's a great thing in allowing people to help you. That can be really beneficial for other people, you know, and it can be a little hairy, you know, a little crazy at times, but, it was really about living in the moment. So, all right, and with that, I think we'll take a little 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and hear Leanne. Thank you.
Laura.